Ohio is suing AIG and four other insurance companies, accusing them of price fixing, conspiracy, and other anti-competitive activities against Ohio businesses. Dubai World announced it will pay $5 billion to purchase a 9.5% share of casino MGM Mirage and half of City Center Hotels. Dubai's investment includes a portion of the multi-billion dollar Las Vegas City Center project, scheduled to open in 2009. Light sweet crude is trading at $71.71 a barrel. Gold is trading at $675 an ounce. And on Wall Street, Dow Jones is down 106 points. The Nasdaq is down 30 points. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Jay Gallet.
James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown. Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show. We're pleased that you've decided to join our program this afternoon, and you just listened to the best opening in all of radio. I'll tell you, I love that. I do. Always have. And we'll stick with it for a while. We've had it for a long time. It's kind of our signature, and we love that piece. I do anyway. I just saw some sad news on the chat room. They're talking about, and I know you all remember the name, Richard Jewell, and we thank Elo for putting this up. Richard Jewell, the guy that was the security guard in Atlanta that was suspected of setting off the bomb in Atlanta at the Centennial Olympic Park during the 1996 Olympics, he died. And he died on Wednesday. I'm not sure if it was Wednesday he died, but he was only 44. He died of natural causes at his home in Woodbury, Georgia. What a shame. He'd been suffering from diabetes and kidney failure. He's one of those guys that after what happened to him, you'd hoped he'd have a long, fruitful life, because his life literally was destroyed when he was accused of being the bomber there at the Olympics in Atlanta. You know, I'm not exactly sure if... Do I remember? Did they ever actually catch the right one or not? I'm not sure. Someone fill me in on that. I'm not sure. I don't remember. Can't remember everything, you know. Hey, welcome back to the show. We're going to have coming up in a few minutes, Mr. Gary Farmer, well-known attorney, and he's going to talk to us about the Katrina victims who've been absolutely screwed and abused by insurance companies. Their profits literally went through the roof. And we'll have him on just coming up in, maybe less than 10 minutes. So your calls are welcome at 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. Of course, we touched on the Senator Larry Craig thing today. Sad situation in one way, interesting in another, in an odd, obscene kind of way. It's a little bit funny, the hypocrisy. Every time these Republicans get caught with their hand in a cookie jar, it's a... They run screaming into the night. And, of course, we've got the situation wide open right now. Place your bets on who's going to be the new Attorney General of the United States. Who do you think? They've had the name Michael Chertoff out there. Joe Lieberman's name has been mentioned. My God. That's a scary thought, isn't it? Rick Santorum has been mentioned. That's even scarier to me. I think if Rick Santorum's made Attorney General of the United States, we all might as well get out those pointy Quaker hats and stuff again and the black clothes. And jeez, there's nobody that scares me much more than Rick Santorum. That guy is a weirdo of the highest order. And I understand that he's making a good living in Washington nowadays. He's doing some consulting work and working for a think tank and all that. They don't go away, do they? And it doesn't matter which side of the aisle they're on. If they're well-known and they're high-profile, they don't go away. Never. They hang in there and leech off the public in some way. And that's exactly what Rick Santorum is doing today. Oh, and thank you to... they've posted that Eric Rudolph confessed to that, so that bombing. Thank you. Thank you. 866-546-5254. And I do want to remind all of our listeners that Peter Godbolt's going to be taking the evening off. He's got a nasty cold, and his throat just won't handle the whole thing. So get well, Peter. We're rooting for you, bud. We were talking about this Attorney General thing. I'm not sure who I want. I said yesterday I think Patrick Fitzgerald would be an excellent choice. I think he could get passed very, very, very easily. I think the Democrats would go for him. I think the Republicans would gnash their teeth and go for him, knowing that the American public thinks he's a good choice and very fair-minded guy and a guy that will stand for the law no matter what. President or anybody else come to him and say, hey, we want this done. He said, no, not if it's not legal. We won't. That's what I think of Patrick Fitzgerald. I think he would do the bidding of the law and not the bidding of... renegade president and his advisors like Karl Rove and the way they tried to do with John Ashcroft and all. I don't think you'd get a guy like Patrick Fitzgerald to behave in such a manner. I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. 866-546-5254. And I see Mr. Georgie Bush is getting ready to ask for $50 billion, to be billion dollars more for Iraq. I don't know. $50 billion more for Iraq. And if he asks for it, he plans to ask Congress next month for up to $50 billion in additional funding for the war in Iraq. White House official said yesterday, a move that appears to reflect increasing administration confidence that it can fend off congressional calls for a rapid drawdown of U.S. forces. Bet you this. I bet you if he goes in front of the Congress and asks for $50 billion... bet you the Democrats cave and give it to him. Anybody want to hold the bets on that? I'm saying they will. I'm saying that they will let him get away with it once again. I have no indication, no confidence that the Democrats will show some spine and do the right thing on this. I really don't. I don't have any confidence in them to do the right thing. I'm sorry. But that's the way I feel about it. We're going to take a break, get a hold of our second guest of the day, and we'll be right back.
One night of sin is what I'm not paying for. The things I did and I saw.
How absolutely ridiculous. How ridiculous. And the idea the idea that I mean, would they all just like break out into a dance line? Is this the kind of thing that these people were envisioning? It's like, oh, they're all lined up like the British. We'll just shoot them all down. What the hell do these... what planet are they from? Oh, that's right. From the sexually repressed. Oh. But... The piece here actually sums up nicely. You see here, gay community leaders in California said Friday that they found the notion of a gay bomb both offensive and almost laughable at the same time.
Oh,
sad situation in one way, interesting in another, in an odd, obscene kind of way. It's a little bit funny, the hypocrisy. Every time these Republicans get caught with their hand in a cookie jar, they run screaming into the night. And, of course, we've got the situation wide open right now. Place your bets on who's going to be the new Attorney General of the United States. Who do you think? They've had the name Michael Chertoff out there. Joe Lieberman's name has been mentioned. My God. That's a scary thought, isn't it? Rick Santorum has been mentioned. That's even scarier to me. I think if Rick Santorum's made Attorney General of the United States, we all might as well get out those pointy Quaker hats and stuff again and the black clothes. And jeez, there's nobody that scares me much more than Rick Santorum. That guy is a weirdo of the highest order. And I understand that he's making a good living in Washington nowadays. He's doing some consulting work and working for a think tank and all that. They don't go away, do they? And it doesn't matter which side of the aisle they're on. If they're well-known and they're high-profile, they don't go away. Never. They hang in there and leech off the public in some way. And that's exactly what Rick Santorum is doing today. Oh, and thank you to... they've posted that Eric Rudolph confessed to that, so that bombing. Thank you. Thank you. 866-546-5254. And I do want to remind all of our listeners that Peter Godbolt's going to be taking the evening off. He's got a nasty cold, and his throat just won't handle the whole thing. So get well, Peter. We're rooting for you, bud. We were talking about this Attorney General thing. I'm not sure who I want. I said yesterday I think Patrick Fitzgerald would be an excellent choice. I think he could get passed very, very, very easily. I think the Democrats would go for him. I think the Republicans would gnash their teeth and go for him, knowing that the American public thinks he's a good choice and a very fair-minded guy and a guy that will stand for the law no matter what president or anybody else come to him and say, hey, we want this done. And he said, no, not if it's not legal. We won't. That's what I think of Patrick Fitzgerald. I think he would do the bidding of the law and not the bidding of... renegade president and his advisors like Karl Rove and the way they tried to do with John Ashcroft and all. I don't think you'd get a guy like Patrick Fitzgerald to behave in such a manner. I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. 866-546-5254. And I see Mr. Georgie Bush is getting ready to ask for $50 billion, to be billion dollars more for Iraq. I don't know. $50 billion more for Iraq. And if he asks for it, he plans to ask Congress next month for up to $50 billion in additional funding for the war in Iraq. White House official said yesterday, a move that appears to reflect increasing administration confidence that it can fend off congressional calls for a rapid drawdown of U.S. forces. Bet you this. I bet you if he goes in front of the Congress and asks for $50 billion, bet you the Democrats cave and give it to him. Anybody want to hold the bets on that? I'm saying they will. I'm saying that they will let him get away with it once again. I have no indication, no confidence that the Democrats will show some spine and do the right thing on this. I really don't. I don't have any confidence in them to do the right thing. I'm sorry, but that's the way I feel about it. We're going to take a break, get a hold of our second guest of the day, and we'll be right back.
One night of sin is what I'm not paying for. The things I did and I saw would make the earth stand still. Call my name. It makes me feel so ashamed. I've lost.
one night of sin is what I'm not paying for. The things I did and I saw would make the ring stand still.
All right, and we are back. And as promised, we have with us today Gary Farmer, a noted attorney. He's a partner in Friedland, Farmer, Russo, Barron, and Scheller. He's got quite a diverse, wide-ranging background with his practice, including litigation and appellate practice on behalf of families and consumers who've been injured or damaged by wrongs committed by the nation's largest drug, tobacco, and HMO companies. And today we wanted to talk to him about one of the big industries in this country, insurance, and insurance and Katrina. Gary, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Guy. I appreciate it. It's nice to be here.
Well, it's that awful anniversary again, and something we don't like to think about, but we need to think about, and most especially we need to think about the insurance companies and what they've done or not done, most especially with the folks in Katrina that were counting on them to fulfill their obligations. As you and I mentioned briefly before the program, before you went on, I live in South Florida. I know all about the hurricanes and how insurance companies have backed out of their obligations, and I know you do as well. How about giving us a synopsis of how things sit and where we are with the insurance companies in the land of Katrina?
Well, thank you. It's you know, we're making slow but steady progress, and unfortunately, I think that it sometimes takes catastrophic events like a Katrina or like the 2004 hurricane season that Florida experienced to generate some change. But you know, here in Florida, for example, you know, the Florida Justice Association, an organization of which I'm a member, has been working to sort of put truth and honesty back in the process. Some of the things that we've learned since Katrina is how these insurance companies have enjoyed billions of dollars in profits while coming up with all kinds of excuses to deny claims. And then they come back, and here in Florida we've had quite a crisis with regard to insurance rates and property insurance coverage, and you know, these insurance companies come in and they tell these tales of woe. And you know, one of the first things I think we needed to do as a society is to make sure that we're getting truthful information from these insurance companies. And you know, Congress sort of started the ball rolling, and we in Florida followed suit with simple measures like making these insurance company executives sign their financial statements under oath, so that there is a penalty, you know, a perjury penalty if they misrepresent their condition. And, you know, that subtle change has resulted in, you know, some eye-opening numbers and information. The report that's recently come out, Pattern of Greed 2007, how insurance companies put profits over policyholders, documents over $100 billion in profits from the world's, from the country's rather largest insurance companies over the last several years. And when you look around Louisiana and Mississippi and even still, you know, on the southwest coast of Florida and see all the devastation that remains and the repairs that have gone undone, it's in large part due to the denials by the insurance companies on these legitimate claims. And so it's certainly still a work in progress, but people need to be aware of the problems insurance poses in our society. I mean, so many of our big social issues, whether it be health care or property insurance or protection, really a lot of the problems that we face as a society stem from the insurance industry. And it's again unfortunate that it takes a catastrophic events, excuse me, like Katrina or hurricanes in Florida to focus people's attention on these issues.
As far as Katrina is concerned, do you have any numbers on how many outstanding claims that still may be being held there? Just how significant is the problem between policyholders and insurance companies there who have been unwilling or in some cases, I guess, unable to pay those that went defunct?
Right. I don't have any statistics in front of me. I've read various numbers ranging of upwards to 35% to 50% of claims remain unpaid. There are several large class action litigation cases going on in Mississippi and Louisiana right now. Thousands and thousands of residents, you know, who have pooled together in class actions trying to get their claims paid. Is the quintessential situation where we see the value and the importance of class action litigation, because in many of these cases the people's claims are maybe, you know, for a few thousand, $10,000, $20,000, $50,000, but the expense of litigating those cases on an individual basis can be just overwhelming. And so they've had to pool together and bring these claims. But what's interesting, Guy, is you know, when we talk about this issue, the Insurance Institute, which is a private entity that is essentially a mouthpiece or a fully controlled entity by the insurance industry, issued a report shortly after Katrina that said that 95% of all claims were paid within 3 months after the disaster. And of course, now we know that to be blatantly false, and it kind of goes back to my previous comment that when you rely on the insurance industry to give information, and you don't have access to the underlying data, or you don't have things like sworn reports and the threat of penalty if you're misrepresenting information, the public can really be misled. And so I'm sorry I can't give you an answer as to the number of outstanding claims, but it's certainly in the thousands, if not hundreds of thousands. And if you just drive through those areas, you will see the people that continue to suffer because, you know, they faithfully paid their insurance premiums all those years. And then when that terrible thing happened in their life and they finally made a claim, you know, the insurance company let them down.
Oh, you're exactly right. Even in our area here, you can still see the blue roofs on some places where claims haven't been paid. What a novel idea, making them swear to tell the truth and be under oath. That's something that they're not known for. We've had people on here from that Insurance Institute that, and I was amazed that they would come on the program, first of all, and talk about this insurance situation. But what do you think about, you know, government oversight on this? I mean, we have insurance commissioners like in our state, and I assume every state has insurance commissioners. And yet, in Florida, for example, the insurance companies got away with bloody murder.
Yeah, and you're exactly right, and. You know, in many instances, it's unfortunate. For example, I'll go back to Florida again, and forgive me for doing that, but it is where I live, and you know, the stuff that I'm most familiar with. And I do a lot of volunteer lobbying work, unpaid lobbying work on behalf of consumers on these issues. And we saw a steady erosion of the powers of the Department of Insurance here in Florida under the Jeb Bush administration. And we've got a new governor now, Charlie Crist, and we sort of changed our system a little bit as well. And now we see the insurance commissioner trying to take a more active role in these matters. But there's no doubt that government needs to be more involved in this issue and this process. It needs to be, there needs to be more transparency on the issues of underwriting. For example, these insurance companies, I'll use Allstate as an example. Following Hurricane Andrew back in the early 90s in Florida, Allstate decided, you know, we better not have all our eggs in one basket. So they decided to create what we call PUPs, and they are little mini insurance companies for each state. So rather than Allstate, the big company writing homeowners policies, they set up Allstate Florida, Allstate Georgia, Allstate Alabama, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yet Allstate Florida, writing policies in Florida, when it quotes you an insurance rate, when it quotes you the premium, and it goes through the underwriting process to do that, it uses hurricane loss data for the entire hurricane zone, which for the United States stretches from Maine all the way around the tip of Florida over to Texas. So they come to the state of Florida hat in hand wanting relief so that they can lower premiums. They use data that shows their losses in Florida only, yet they're basing their premium calculations on losses their parent company has incurred around the country. So they're painting a very, very incomplete and really disingenuous picture for the legislature. And then when our Florida legislature goes ahead and gives them relief, and I won't bore you with the details of that relief, but it was relief designed to protect them with something called reinsurance that the state was actually going to pay for itself. This was supposed to lower the rates. Well, guess what? Our rates haven't gone down in Florida. They've gone up.
Absolutely.
Because the insurance companies turned around and said, you know what? The state's reinsurance isn't good enough. We're going to go out and buy more of it with our own money.
Yes. Yes, and we're faced with a situation right now, and I assume you're probably well-versed with it, about and people outside of Florida here. We're talking to many people outside of Florida. But we've got a situation here where we've got an insurance company of last resort, really, called Citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And when Nationwide and State Farm and all these, and Nationwide just announced a couple of days ago they're going to pull 40,000 more premiums out of the state on the home coverage. Mm-hmm. When they pull out, you have no choice but to go with the Citizens. And correct me if I'm wrong, but if we have a real disastrous situation here, if we had a Katrina here or a Hurricane Andrew again, I don't think that the Citizens fund would be solvent and would not be able to pay the claims they would have to pay. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong, Guy. And as a matter of fact, if and when that were to occur, the state would then turn around and assess every taxpayer in the state of Florida
yes.
an assessment to come up with the needed funds.
So we're paying for insurance that we know we don't have, and if the time comes when we need to collect on it, we know we won't collect and we'll have to pay some more out of our pocket.
Yes, yes. And, you know, you bring up a very important issue that I think more government officials need to look at, and that is this concept of what we call cherry picking. These companies have been allowed to selectively decide which types of coverage they're going to write and where. For example, Nationwide, you mentioned, Allstate, State Farm, they've all drastically reduced their property insurance coverage in the state of Florida, claiming that it's too risky. Yet they come here and they make tons of money writing health insurance, auto insurance, all other types of insurance. Well, some states have enacted, and I think Florida and others need to look at this issue, anti-cherry-picking laws. And those laws would do the following. They would say that, look, if you are selling property insurance anywhere else in the United States of America, so that it's something you do as a regular business, okay, and you want to come to Florida and sell auto or health or some of the other big money insurances, you must also agree to write property insurance. And by doing that, we would force more private companies back into the state of Florida, because the fact of the matter is they're not going to walk away from the very lucrative auto insurance and health insurance markets. Now, our legislature did pass a cherry-picking provision that's going to kick in here in a couple years in Florida, but the insurance industry has indicated they're going to challenge it in court. And frankly, it may take an act of Congress as a matter of antitrust, which is a whole other issue we could talk about, Guy, the fact that these insurance companies have enjoyed exemptions from the United States antitrust laws. And I think from all we've learned in the last, especially couple decades with these catastrophic events, I think we really need to revisit the issue of the antitrust laws, and are these insurance companies going to be allowed to act in these anti-competitive ways? And I, for one, certainly believe that these companies have worked together and may have even colluded to reduce the number of policies they're willing to take on just to drive the price up for those policies.
Oh, well, sure, and we're seeing allegations of that in Ohio right now with AIG and some price fixing going on, taking advantage of businesses in Ohio.
The time has come to get rid of the antitrust exemptions from insurance companies. They are everywhere. They are controlling our lives in so many different facets and ways, and they should be subject to the same rules and the same controls and oversight that all other businesses are subject to.
Well, I should hope so. And this cherry picking is an ugly situation. They do come into Florida, and I talk a lot about Florida because that's where I live as well. And they sell auto premiums, all of them they want to, and yet they've been allowed by law to pull out all of their home insurance, property insurance,
yep.
And it's made for. Well, we're sitting on a time bomb here. I don't think there's any question of it. We will get hit again by a hurricane. There will be losses. Many factors into it, the global warming, the whole thing. It doesn't look any better in the future. And as you mentioned earlier, a lot of people had hopes this year from our Florida legislature. And our new governor spoke, and you know he did. He spoke a lot about it, that one of his main priorities was lowering taxes and lowering insurance. And I don't know hardly anyone who's had their premiums go down. Many of them have gone up. I know mine did.
Yeah, no, the governor certainly led the charge, and he cajoled, and he twisted arms, and he went public on these issues, and he tried to lead our legislature along, and then, unfortunately, they didn't quite follow his lead the way they should, and Guy, in the interest of full disclosure, I'm a lifelong and full-fledged Democrat, but our new Republican governor, Charlie Crist, is really to be commended, because he has put partisan politics aside, and he's really looked at the needs of Florida consumers, and he certainly really tried to get our legislature to come along. But you said it exactly right. We are on a time bomb, and again, using Florida as an example, we better hope that we don't have some catastrophic storm like a Katrina or an Andrew in the next year or two, because we just don't have the reserve for that type of event, and we really need to hope that we don't have any big storms in the next year or two, so that our citizens' company can build up its reserve for that big one that, as you say, is inevitable. It's not if, it's just a matter of when.
It is, and when it does come and there aren't the reserves to pay people, there are going to be thousands of people lose their homes, lose everything they have. We've paid premiums, and we'll end up with nothing, and the profits to the insurance company will be gone. It's well, it's a mess. It really is. Gary, where can your website with your organization, where can folks go to read some more about this?
Yes, yeah. Our law firm is based in Weston, Florida. That's Weston, Weston Lawyers.com. Westonlawyers.com. Not the hotel, I-N, but the city, O-N. And my email address is Gary@WestonLawyers.com. Anybody who has any questions about insurance matters or these important issues we face, I consider myself to be a consumer advocate both in and out of the courtroom, and happy to help anybody I can.
I think you're over in the Miami area, right?
Yeah, it's actually about West Fort Lauderdale. Weston is really just West Fort Lauderdale.
I think you're right straight east of where I'm sitting here right now. So
that's exactly right, right across the Alligator Alley.
That's right. I want to thank you so much, Gary, for being on the program today. This is a subject of great interest to a lot of people. And we've seen what can happen, the terrible things that can happen on the second anniversary of Katrina. And a lot of people still sitting high and dry over there waiting for claims to be settled, and probably will be for some time to come. And it's advocates like you that have shown a spotlight on this, and hopefully we'll come to a resolution to it some of these days. Thanks so much, Gary, for being on the program.
Thank you, Guy. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. Gary Farmer, and he is an advocate for consumers. And in the interest of disclosure, he is a lifelong Democrat, and I'm glad he told you all that. I guess I would have gotten around to it. You know, to tell you the truth, I didn't know. I usually don't ask somebody's politics when they come on the program. It doesn't matter. All I want them to do is come on and tell us the truth of whatever it is. And we are sitting on a bad, bad situation with this this insurance mess. We're going to go to our weekly radio address, weekly presidential radio address from the Archives of History, and we'll be back after in just a couple of minutes.
What is the deal with the American people?
If you don't want to see checkers put down, you'll submit to my reasonable demands.
This is President Gerald Ford. Please help me. I've fallen.
I don't recall.
Read my lips. No new offspring.
Saddam Hussein, tear down this hospital.
In celebration of Weekly Radio Address History Month, WeeklyRadioAddress.com presents a noted presidential radio address from the extended White House radio archives. This week, President Lyndon Johnson from April 10th, 1965.
Fellow citizens, I'm here today to tell you that we're making great progress in Vietnam as we continue to train the Vietnamese forces so that when they stand up, we may stand down. I urge all Americans to remain steadfast in this fight, for we must never forget that it was the communist forces of Vietnam, after all, who attacked us at Pearl Harbor. This war in Vietnam, it must also be remembered, is just one small part of my administration's ongoing war on huts. We must defeat huts wherever we find them. South Vietnam, North Vietnam, Laos, or Cambodia. We must seek out straw huts, bamboo huts, huts with families and little children in them. And they must all be destroyed by fire. Well, huts are the very embodiment of evil, and we must prevail in this fight. These huts must not be allowed to spread to our country. The very fate of our own United States mud-based housing market rests on our ability to rid the world of these dangerous foreign huts. I thank you.
We're back with the last, 24 minutes or so of the Guy James Show. We're glad you decided to join us here. You've got a lot of selections on the dial and on the internet, and we're humbled indeed that you decided to join us this afternoon. Much going on the news. Of course, we've had the Larry Craig situation. If you'd like to talk about that, give us a call, 866-546-5254. I know that's the subject that's not going to go away for a while. Of course, the second anniversary of Katrina. We've got the Gonzalez resignation following the Rove resignation. The rats are bailing off of the ship. The sinking ship, I might add. And it's not hard to see that that ship is going belly up. It's such an interesting and, on one hand, interesting, and the other hand, ugly time, in my opinion, in American history. And I think these are dangerous times. I truly do. This is the information age, and the public should be more well-informed than ever. And being more well-informed, they ought to be able to keep dangerous propaganda under control. That's true. However, this new information age also is making it possible to spread propaganda to the masses in a far, far more efficient and rapid manner than ever before. And we're seeing it constantly now. The propaganda is starting to fly about Petraeus and the war, when he comes home and what he's going to say. The Bush propaganda machine is in high, high gear. And the question is, will one of these offset the other? On the one hand, you can spread propaganda faster. On the other hand, it's easier to find out what the truth is. And will the truth be able to overcome the dissemination of lies that are being spread to achieve political advantage by this administration right now? And, of course, time is going to tell. But so far, I'd have to call this battle a draw. Last week, for example, we had the new National Intelligence report, the NIE, National Intelligence Estimate, and it was widely distributed on the Internet and by the news programs. But to counter what the NIE said, the radical right unleashed a massive media propaganda campaign to once again associate Iraq with 9/11 and pump up their case for continuing this illegal, immoral war. And the very accomplished liar and prevaricator that you all know, Ari Fleischer, former press secretary for Junior Bush, is heading up this new conservative think tank that's raised millions and millions of dollars. I think the figure was $15 million to spend on media promotions of their new ads that are touting the benefits and the achievement of Junior Bush's war. Pure scare tactics. But scare tactics work, and they know it. Otherwise, they wouldn't be wasting their money. And let's face it, these people have been the most masterful fear-mongers to ever inhabit the world of politics. They've fed upon the fears of the American people to get us into Bush's Iraq War, and now they're counting on that fear to keep us there. And we hear this awful phrase that just turns my stomach, we're fighting them over there so we don't have to fight them here. You know, mushroom clouds, Islamo-fascist, Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda. You know, they'd have us think there's an Al-Qaeda member after, behind every tree, behind every bush. And they never stop their incessant smear and fear campaign. They never, ever let up. That's their key. That's their secret. They keep on beating the drums. No matter if you're winning or losing, just keep beating the drums. Never, never stop. That is their strength. And they find the strength, you find the strength of your political opponent and you repeatedly hit him in the face with it. Find out that Al Gore, for example, find out that he's a devout environmentalist and make environmentalism out to be a radical leftist policy that only kooks would embrace. You know, never mind that the vast majority of the scientific community thinks global warming is real and that it's worrisome. But you take that information and you attack Al Gore and you make him out to be a radical leftist who's half nuts. And another example, John Kerry. John Kerry's a true patriot if there ever was one. A man is and should be proud of his service to this country. He's a man who very honorably served his country in a time of war. Not on the fringes of the war. Oh, no. But he was heavily involved in it. He took enemy fire. He was decorated. And what do? They take his strength of being a war veteran, some of hardly any of them were, and they attack him with his service to our country and make him out to be a liar and an anti-American because he came home and informed the people of this country about the true horrors of the Vietnam conflict. And those who started the attack on him had no military experience. In fact, most of them ran from that service, just like millions of other American men did. So what do the conservatives do? They raise a bunch of money. They recruit a bunch of Republican military veterans who are willing to turn on one of their own, and they smear him over and over and over again, and they call themselves the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. The fact is that not a lot of truth came out of that group, but their message was pounded home with millions and millions of dollars. And once again, with the incessant beat of the Republican propaganda drum. I'm not naive. I know politics is a dirty business. I know both sides engage in things that they had not ought to participate in. You take every opportunity of your opponent's weaknesses and his faults, and you stretch the truth sometimes, and you make wild claims about your own record. And you make your opponent out to be unworthy of holding office. But the Republicans have gone the extra mile. They've sank further and further into the gutter than any of the groups before them. And they've, in my opinion, they've crossed the line from hard-fought bare-knuckles politics into the realm of evil, despicable, massively financed propaganda campaigns. And they're good at it. Oh, they are good at it. They're the best. But, as we've mentioned on this program many, many times, the Democrats have allowed them to do it. The Democrats are complicit in the politics of personal destruction because they've laid down and they've allowed the Republicans to run over them like a big dump truck flattens a piece of roadkill out on the highway. I don't think either of the political parties has ever been so as inept as the Democratic Party is right now. I think by now we all know that the Democrats took back the House and the barest of majorities in the Senate, only because the Republicans were rife with corruption and scandal. I think that's the only reason that the Democrats were able to end up where they are now. And the Bush administration has had a sort of reverse Midas touch, and everything they've touched has turned to crap. But the Democrats really didn't step up to the plate and make their own case. They just sat by, and they have allowed the Republicans to self-destruct. And from the look of the Democratic presidential campaign, it looked like they're more than willing to do the same thing for the 2008 election. My question is, do any of the Democratic candidates who have a chance of winning, do any of them have a solid, well-spoken, definitive plan to end this war? Are any of them putting forth a comprehensible, workable health care plan? Something that's spelled out in detail that every American can understand. Are any of them talking about ways to turn around the rapid demise of the great middle class? If any of them are doing this, any of them that are electable, I sure don't hear it. And I don't know anyone who thinks the Democrats are doing even a decent job of articulating any plan that they might have. In my humble opinion, I think the Democrats are running another campaign of "We're not George Bush." And that might get them elected this time around. But if one of them gets in office and isn't able to meet the needs of those who put them there this time, their reign in the White House and the reign of a Democratic Congress will be short-lived indeed. I'm ready, and I know you're ready, for a Democratic leader who will stand tall and fight back and stick his or her neck out with solid plans to end the war and solid plans to help the domestic economic crisis that we're facing right now. And make no mistake, it is a crisis. I want a Democratic candidate who will stand toe-to-toe with a Republican candidate and say, here is my plan to provide affordable health care for the American people. Just like I've heard so many of you say, I am so tired of hearing, oh, we have to do something about health care, and if I'm elected, I will. Well, I'm tired of hearing, if I'm elected president, I'll end the war. When? How? I'm sick of hearing I'll work to provide jobs for the American people. Really? How are you going to do it? What's your plan? Spell it out so the average Joe can understand what you're talking about and realize that it's a workable plan and it's something that he can go to the polls and pull the lever for you over. Quit the political crap. It's time for plain talk with people. I'm tired of hearing the Republicans accuse the Democrats of being soft on national defense. Why the hell are the Democrats afraid to fight back on that issue? Why are they willing, and they do seem willing, to be painted as some sort of yellow-bellied cowards who want to cut and run and allow the enemies of the United States to conquer us? That's what the Republicans would have them believe. Why this wishy-washy, let's wait and see attitude from our candidates? Where's the spine? Where's the desire not only to be elected to office, but to actually lead? Doesn't it seem to you that the ultimate goal of a lot of today's politicians is to get elected and stay elected until they can retire from office? How many of them are actually leaders today, genuine leaders, people that you'd run through the wall for? Where's the Franklin Roosevelt of today? Where's the John Kennedy of today? Those are men that you'd go to hell and back for. Where are the leaders today that we would do that for? Why don't they come forth? And I guess it's our fault. It seems as though that we, as a party, are willing to settle for, at best, mediocrity. It seems we're willing to have the majority, but not force those we elected to truly be the voices of the people. We're willing to leave things in their hands to do the right thing, when many times the right thing, in their opinions, is exactly the wrong thing for America. Where is that great leader? Out of 300 million people, is there not someone that the American people can get behind? Where is that person? I wish I knew. I'm not seeing him. Oh, there are a few, but in my opinion, none of them are running for president right now. And probably not going to. And you know one I'm talking about. Let's go to the phones. 866-546-5254. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy. It's a fellow named Dennis Kucinich that you're talking about.
Well, the only problem is, Dave, I said electable. And I don't think Dennis is electable. I love Dennis Kucinich. Love him.
Well, you know, I'm totally convinced that he is defeating Hillary 20-25-1, and so is Edwards. And our press, the corporate-owned media, is telling them to say he has no chance in the world. The reason for they're saying that, they're making the press lie to us because he's saying health care for everybody, and how would I pay for it? I would tax the rich and take away their tax relief. And that's as un-American as you can get to them. He stepped on their button.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that's why. He's everybody's. If you are a laborer, you want Kucinich. He's your man. If you want the White House criminals held accountable, he's your man. If you're a gay or gay supporter, he's your man. You know, if you want to end that war and end it fast, he's your man. And these are all the things the people in America right now are wanting, these kind of things.
Oh, I agree, Dave. I think that he's your man. I have not seen any evidence where I could be convinced that Dennis could get elected. I think it's a shame. He's not a tall, handsome man, which now seems to be one of the criteria for being the president of the United States.
I think all thinking people will set that aside.
Well,
you know,
Dave, you just said the magic word, though. You said thinking people.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been beginning to question how many thinking people go to the polls.
You know, there's one other thing, and I've been in and out doing my laundry here a bit, and I hope you haven't got over it. But this anniversary of the Katrina, so many things just were totally wrong. It was FEMA was not only inept, but they were deliberately withholding off aid. I'll give you one example, and maybe you could explain it to me. The Navy has a hospital ship right there in the bay. It has a lady captain. She calls and informs them that they have any number of doctors, 50-some lifeboats, fully equipped, that they can desalinize 100,000 gallons of water a day. They tell her, stand by. She checks with them again in an hour. They're more rude. We ask you to stand by. She stands by a couple more hours. This is a ship that could be, it was designed to be just there for that case. Then she calls in again and they said, Captain, turn your ship around and depart this area. Now, I have to ask, why would they do a thing like that? And the answer I come up with, harsh as it may be, they were trying to turn a blue area red.
Well, we did talk about that, Dave, and I agree. I think there's no question that when the White House announced that they put Karl Rove in charge of the Katrina recovery, that there is no doubt in my mind whatsoever, and like you said, it may seem harsh, But I think it's the undeniable truth that when Karl Rove was given the task of rebuilding that area, his thoughts were on one thing, and that was turning it completely red, and he has done so. I completely agree. I think absolutely that's what they did. That's what they were up to, and he's probably damn proud of it.
So add however many they starved or drowned to death to their list of crimes, and you can't imagine how bad these people are.
No, and Dave, I don't think a lot of people want to believe that they're as bad as they are. I didn't want to believe that they're as bad as they are, and I know you don't either, but sooner or later you got to face reality.
You certainly do. That's the big first step, is seeing clearly reality, and then you come up with a plan to deal with it as best you can.
Yeah.
But they are an outrage beyond belief. Love your show, though, guy.
Thank you, Dave. Good to hear from you. Is it harsh to say that? I don't think so. It's never harsh to tell the truth. Sometimes it's difficult. Sometimes the truth is difficult to hear. And after examining all the evidence that I have seen, and, you know, we you and I, we have these controversies back and forth. We don't all agree on everything. But in this case, in Katrina, after examining all the evidence I have seen, I cannot see that it was anything but a deliberate act of incompetence, letting a guy like Brownie run this, who was in charge of, what, some horse farm or something before that, and trusting this massive effort to a man like that, and trusting Michael Chertoff, letting Karl Rove head up the recovery of that area, a man with no experience in that department whatsoever, neither had Brownie. You can't think that it was anything but intentional to let them just sink or swim, and they knew that they would sink. And who suffered? Over 1,000 people dead. The lives of tens of thousands have been absolutely destroyed. Not just temporarily, but forever. Families scattered all across this country. People that could no longer find work. People whose homes were floated, devastated. Those people, when you think back of those times, and you saw those helpless people on the roofs, you saw those people stranded in trees, desperate for help, and none was coming for so long for so many of those people, and so many died, so many needlessly died because of the incompetence. No, the government can't foresee everything that's going to happen, and no, the government cannot stop deaths from happening in natural disasters. But that's the situation that could have been, well, it could have been made so much better than it ended up being. So many fewer lives would have been lost if it had been handled properly. And so many fewer people would have been displaced. Thanks and congratulations to all the private entities that went in, the churches, the charity foundations. People went in and did yeoman's work. Habitat for Humanity. People in there building new houses. Wonderful efforts on their part. And with the amount of money that the federal government spent in there, a lot of good could have been done. A hell of a lot more good than has been done. It was simply mismanaged. And as we talked about with Rick Perlstein today, that was the first light on this administration of utter incompetence to many, many people. That's when they realized, that was the time they realized that, wait a minute, these people are in over their heads. Sad that the United States government and the people were put under the watch and care of these people. But We did it. We put them there. God help us all. I hope we can get by and not have anything else like that happen until we get a new administration in power, some people that have love and compassion for their fellow human beings, that know what it's like to not go to bed and go to sleep at night when you know tens of thousands of your fellow human beings are suffering. Not have a president that would do that. Someday. Someday not far off. It'll change. Promise you. Thanks so much for joining the program today. Appreciate your listenership. Appreciate being a part of the Head On Radio Network. And I appreciate having Billy Shears, our music director. And all of you as well. Thanks. See you next time. Don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Later, gang.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Bush can fly into Iraq as many times as he wants, but his pilot's ability to land a plane in a war zone doesn't mean that the surge is going well. And Bush can call in his Iraqi viceroys and vassals for the obligatory photo op, but none of that changes the conditions on the ground. The LA Times reports that the additional 28,500 troops have not only failed to bridge the sectarian divides, they've also failed to substantially decrease civilian deaths, and more Iraqis are fleeing their homes now than even before the surge began. In the days ahead, as Bush once again prepares to exploit 9/11 for his Iraq war purposes, we'll be hearing a lot from him and General Petraeus on why we just have to stay this new course. Don't believe them. This is the same old course, only with marginally more troops. They can't solve the political problems that lie at the heart of the sectarian split, and they only add to the impression that this is a foreign occupation. There's a startling statistic in the New York Times. 60,000 Iraqis are now being held prisoner, more than twice the amount last year. Bush can fill Abu Ghraib to the rafters, but that still won't end this conflict. Even if he could put a hood over the head of every other Iraqi man, he wouldn't resolve.